Welcome to The Seer Show. Join us as we explore medicine, health, mental health, mindset, and fitness, guided by lifelong seeker of knowledge, Sifu Raphael. He will lead us on a transformative journey with groundbreaking insights and extraordinary guests from around the world. Together, we'll dive into the latest holistic approaches to well-being and the profound connections between mind, body, and soul. Sifu Raphael's expertise in positive thinking, resilience, and personal growth will inspire you to reach new heights. Get ready for The Seer Show. It's time to embrace a brighter, healthier, and more empowered future.
Good morning, everyone in the U.S., and good evening, everybody in Australia. I am thrilled to have a great, great human being here with us, Sarah Willoughby. You are an exceptional human being, and thank you for allowing me to call you a friend. How are you today?
I am so good. Thank you. The feeling is very mutual. I love our conversations and I'm really excited to be here. So thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. So, you know, you did write this incredible book, right? I love it, by the way. And you share your story and you've helped so many people along the way. And I thought a conversation today would be one of transformation, if you will, because it does happen through motherhood. When someone conceives and they go through the process, maybe they start with morning sickness, right? Some do, some don't. And that feeling of, oh, my clothes don't fit me anymore. But it's a good thing, right? When that starts to happen and they have to go shopping for different clothing. A lot of people get leggings and so forth. But I think the true transformation comes at childbirth. That's just my feeling. I'd love to explore this topic with you.
Sure. I think for me, like you said, when you first conceive, for me, it was actually quite confronting because I felt like my body had been taken over by an alien. I had 24/7 sickness. Mm. I went from having just a completely flat stomach to my stomach suddenly growing. And I was like, what is this? What is this thing inside me? Mm. And being able to feel my baby from sort of about 6 weeks, which is really, really early, just like a little butterfly feeling in my stomach. Mm. And it was challenging because I felt so unwell. Mm. But geez, when the morning sickness stopped when I was about 6 months, the morning sickness stopped, and then at 7 months my son was born.
Ooh.
Wow. Just holding him for the first time in my arms when I was allowed to because he was born prem, so he went into NICU. But just looking down at him and holding him and just being like, you are part of me. I created you, was the most incredible experience and one that I feel incredibly blessed to have been able to go through and is why I do the work that I do, because I know that not everybody is fortunate to be in that position. And so I want to spend the rest of my life supporting women and couples to be able to have that same experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got to be a beautiful experience. And, you know, I've said to you before in the past, if I could give birth, I would do it in a heartbeat. I'm probably one of those rare guys, right? Because I was there for my children's when their mother gave birth. And the doctor even asked me to assist in one of them, to push on her and help him out, because there was short of a nurse. But what an incredible experience. And for me as a dad, it was overwhelming with joy and happiness and seeing this creature, if you will, being born, right? And I'm like, I had something to do with it, but I had a very small part in it. I was as supportive as I possibly could, but I couldn't carry the baby. I couldn't feel it in me, right? But I still had that love. I can only imagine the amount of emotions that you go through, and for you to have morning sickness for 6 months, holy cow, that had to be kind of terrible in a way, no?
It wasn't much fun. I don't think I was prepared for that. I have to be honest and say that, and I write about it in my book, there were days when I wanted the pregnancy to stop because I felt like I was on this boat that I couldn't get off with the most awful seasickness. It was just constant. It was the last thing I thought about when I went to sleep. It was the first thing that I thought about when I woke up. I would have like a split second where I felt okay, and then this wave of nausea would come over me again. And I was constantly like vomiting everywhere and running out of meetings at work and vomiting in the car park. And just, it was pretty unpleasant. But I know that there are so many women that would put themselves in that position time and time again to be able to experience it that are struggling. So I felt guilty. I felt ashamed of having those feelings. I knew that I was very, very privileged at the same time. So it was a journey, and I went through that with each pregnancy that I had, with all the pregnancies that I experienced, was that awful morning sickness. I don't know why they call it morning sickness, 24/7 sickness, I call it.
Yeah, because it wasn't just morning, right? It was mid-afternoon, whenever.
It was constant. Mm. So, yeah. But some people have it far worse, and that was just, you know, in comparison to what some women go through to have the children, that was absolutely nothing.
Right. So, but there's also some women who have zero, as we call it, morning sickness. And you're like, what? Why didn't I get that, right?
Yeah, they have the glow. They call it the pregnancy glow. And again, I write about it in my book. I'm like, pregnancy glow? What's that? You know, there was no part of me that was glowing at any point. And by the time I stopped feeling sick, I was actually becoming a mother unexpectedly. Mm. And so I was like, I didn't get that time to sort of mentally prepare for the next part of the journey with my beautiful baby. But of course, I wouldn't have it any other way when I reflect on that. Yeah,
no, without a doubt. You know, one of the things that is always very interesting to me is, and we're talking about transforming your mindset. When you become a new mom, this is a guy speaking, right? This is my thoughts. And I may be wrong, I may be right. But I'm not taking credit for anything. So when I think that, you totally change your mindset, because all of a sudden it's no longer about you. It's about, yes, you're feeling certain feelings, but then if you feel a kick, when you go and get a sonogram and you can hear the heartbeat, all of a sudden, you say, wow, there's something inside of me. It's growing. I can feel it. You said earlier it was like butterflies, right? 6 weeks. Mm. But it's so, I can only imagine how crazy that feeling is to feel something inside of you moving. Because before you were pregnant, you never felt anything. Maybe it was gas that you had, right? But not an actual movement inside of your belly. Do you recall the first kick? Do you recall your first sonogram?
I do remember my first sonogram. And I'd been feeling my baby moving from about 6 weeks, which is exceptionally early, and most people don't. And so I'd actually asked them, is this normal? And they said, well, yeah, because you don't have much fat on you, you will be able to feel it quite early. And then it was confirmed to me when I watched my sonogram for the first time, when they were doing the dating scan, and the baby kicked, my son kicked at the same time that I could see it on the screen and oh, wow. feel it in my stomach. And it was just that confirmation to me, no, you're not going crazy. This is your little baby moving around. So that was the most beautiful experience.
Yeah, that's got to be amazing. So, but that's the beginning of a transformation, of a different mindset. And a lot of people now start to help. Like, you're eating for two. Here, have extra. Right? So they're helping you in a way, but sometimes they're hurting you because they overfeed you. Right? They're like, oh, you have to eat more. You have to eat. Wait a minute, I'm full already. Right? So did you find that people were helping you along the way?
I think a lot of people come from a place of love in terms of trying to offer insight and wisdom. Mm-hmm. And I think we still from that have to take what resonates with us. They have our best interests at heart, but each body is unique. You know, each experience is unique. And I think it can be easy in the journey of motherhood to get lost in other people's opinions. Mm. And I think we need to keep coming back to self and listening to the wisdom of our own body. And of course, taking guidance from medical professionals, etc. But I really do feel that it is our unique journey and we need to listen to that wisdom of our body because we know our bodies best. We know what is right for us. We know what works for us. And I had so many people that were trying to offer me all this advice about even just how to cope with the morning sickness. No, it can't be that bad. And that can be a little bit frustrating. And there were times when I felt very misunderstood in my journey to motherhood because it was different for each child. You know, the first one I conceived easily, but then I had a premature baby. And so there comes in all this wisdom around what you should be doing in that situation. And then the second one, as you know, took 4 years to arrive. And that was pretty traumatic. And I nearly lost my life in the process going through IVF. So then there was a whole lot of other wisdom around that pregnancy and around that birth. And then my final pregnancy was, I guess, the best that it could have been. There was still a bit of trauma in there, but I felt most attuned to my body and I felt most prepared to be able to listen to what I needed because I'd been through so much with the other pregnancies and, of course, the pregnancies that I'd actually lost along the way as well.
Mm. So in total, how many pregnancies did you go through?
I had 5 pregnancies, so I lost a baby in 2008, and then I lost twins in 2009. So I lost 3 babies, but two other pregnancies, and then I had three beautiful children that are still here.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. I'm sure super learning experience in the fact that you wrote a book and to help other women go through what you went through. When you consider your first one, would you say that your mindset changed into that of a single, whether you're married or not, doesn't matter. You're a single woman, even if you have a partner, to now someone else. You identify not as a single person, as I'm living for me, but now I'm living for someone else. Did that happen to you as well?
Oh, I think that protective instinct sort of sets in straight away. I would find myself getting very protective over my stomach and people would always be touching it and I wouldn't want them to. And you felt this huge responsibility for this beautiful life that was inside you that you created. And you just wanted to be the best version of yourself. And knowing that even during pregnancy, how you're feeling impacts the baby. And they carry, if you're stressed, they carry that stress. So I was always wanting to do the best. Did I achieve that? Probably not. And I think we beat ourselves up and we put judgment on top of how we're feeling. We sort of we layer our emotions on top of it. And I think we can give ourselves a hard time throughout pregnancy and throughout motherhood. And when we strip it back, if we're coming from a place of love and we're trying to be our best version, I think that's all we can really do. I think we need to give ourselves and each other a little bit more grace as parents.
Absolutely. You just said something that made me have this crazy thought. And you're right. So many people believe that it's their right to touch somebody else's belly without asking permission first. And I think that, and I'm saying this for all women, listen, nobody should touch your belly unless you give them permission. And if somebody touches your belly, it's a good time to slap them across the face and say, I'm sorry, that was the baby, right?
Yeah, the baby's well, just
it wasn't me. The baby slapped you.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's my pregnancy. I'm a little crazy. But when you think somebody should always ask for permission, because if you have a flat belly, somebody doesn't just come over and touch your belly, right? So why should...
Not normally, yeah.
Not normally. Why should anybody have permission or they think they have the permission without asking, right? So I think that anybody out there, if you see somebody, anybody, women, men, children even, should say, is it okay if I touch your belly?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's a private thing, I believe. You know, and it's sacred. I mean, to me, it's sacred. I mean, I know you before you said, I can't believe that I made this baby, but I believe that God made the baby and you're the vehicle that you, I guess, incubated and the baby was formed in you. So I still believe it's a blessing. It's a miracle that a baby was born or a baby's forming inside of any women who are pregnant out there, man, God bless you. Any women who are about to give birth, God bless you. But it's to me, it's such a sacred gift, if you will.
It really is. And I don't think I fully appreciated that until I was struggling to have my second child. I think even though I'd known that I might have complications because I've got PCOS, so I'd thought I might struggle with my first pregnancy and then didn't, I then got I was a bit naive and I was a bit complacent. I thought, oh, you know, I can just ask and I shall receive, so to speak, and I'll have my second baby when I'm ready. And that, of course, didn't happen. So I'm grateful for that journey, actually, because it made me so super appreciative of how blessed I was to be a mom. And I've never taken that for granted. And I know that it has made me a better mother because I'm so invested in my children's well-being and helping them to fulfill their potential, whatever that looks like, rather than it being about me, which it probably would have been if I hadn't gone through the journey I went through. I would have gone back in, I would have popped out four children, I would have gone back to the corporate world, I would have carried on with my career, and they would have come along the journey with me. Mm-hmm. Whereas the way that my journey happened, I was able to take a step back and actually make them the focus of my life in terms of giving me a bigger why to be a better version of myself and to leave a legacy and to all the things that I know that I'm here to do. It's because of them. And that journey that I went on. So the biggest blessing for me.
So your life was transformed even with your miscarriages, because nobody expects to miscarry, right? So you would have thought that you would have had these four children and your life would have continued as it was before.
Yes.
But I think your miscarriages kind of set you on a different trajectory of who you were becoming, right? And so wondering if it was meant to be, right? I think all things are meant to be, even though they're painful, because it taught you and it made you a messenger, if you will, to help people who are going through it or who've gone through it to understand that there's beauty on the other side. Right.
Mm. Yeah. I wouldn't wish the journey that I went on anybody. Oh, it was the most excruciating thing at the time. Mm. And, you know, lying in intensive care, wondering whether this was going to be my last breath was very, very confronting when my IVF went wrong. However, I also knew in that deepest, darkest moment when I was waiting to find out whether I had heart failure that there had to be more to this. This wasn't just about trying to have a baby. Like there was more than that. It was a spiritual journey. It was my journey to becoming who I meant to be. And I knew that. And that's why I made that promise when I sort of did a deal with the universe. And I'm like, if you give me the second chance of life, I will spend the rest of my life being a service. I will spend the rest of my life trying to support other people to transform their lives, whatever that looks like for them. Mm. I have deep gratitude for that journey because, like you said, it got me to where I needed to be. And this journey was so much more than myself. It's the messages that I have and the work that I'm doing. If I can just reach one person and change the trajectory of their journey to motherhood or fatherhood or parenthood, then I feel like my work is done. Mm. You know, it really is that simple to me.
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting when you say it, and you probably, even when you say it, it must resonate back to you, right? Because when we say something, we hear it again, right? We might have said it in our head, but when we vocalize it, does it impact you even deeper?
I think it does. Yeah, I think it really humbles me when I have people who've read my book and they share their insight with me, or they share part of the story that really sort of triggered them or moved them in some way. And you hear it back, you hear that back, and you hear your own words back, or you read a review that somebody's written for you and you hear their words. It really does sort of, it wakes me up again. It's like, whoa, that's me. That's my story. That's making an impact. Mm. That's why I'm here. That's why I went through that. That's why I need to keep doing this work, because it is just so much bigger than me. The ripple effect of one person hearing something that you say maybe for the first time, or hearing the same thing that they've heard a number of times but in a different way, and then sharing that with somebody else and sharing that with somebody else. The ripple effect of that is so huge. And that's why I love doing podcasts. That's why I love our conversations, because I know that the people that are listening need to hear this, even if they're not on a journey to motherhood. Right. You know, it's through our greatest challenges that we really become who we're meant to be. In our darkest moments is where we really truly find the light, and we can rise up and rise above that and give ourselves a purpose and a second chance at life. It's really that simple to me.
Yeah, it's beautiful what you're doing and what you realize you needed to do. Because I'm sure not everybody who goes through what you went through are thinking of others, right? But somehow you figured, I need to help other people, right? And that's the giving nature that's born in you, right? So it's a beautiful thing that you have. And that's why I love the butterfly, right? Because if you think about it, right, it's a second chance or a second life. Right. So that's the transformation, I believe, that we go through. Listen, even as a dad, I think I was transformed, because even though I said earlier I was a small part of it, right, I still feel like I had to do something with it. It was because of me. Right. And yes, I did not carry the baby. I didn't nurse it and all these things. But can I tell you, I was the biggest Mr. Mom ever. Anytime when the baby went from a bassinet to an actual what do you call those again? A crib. I can't even say it. A crib. I slept on the floor for 3 months next to the crib.
Did you?
I did. And oh, wow. I barely slept. And I said to my ex-wife now, I said to her, I said, she's like, what are you doing? Come back to bed. I'm like, no. I said, you know, SIDS and all these different things. I don't. I said, I'm going to be there for my baby no matter what. You did your part. Mm-hmm. I'm doing mine now. So I just put a pillow on the floor and I slept next to the crib. And every so often I would get up, make sure it was breathing. And if it cried, I was there to feed it, the whole deal. So I gave my ex-wife all that. Those evenings were all mine, all mine. Mm. And it didn't matter if I had to get up early to go do something, whatever. I still did not, until I felt the baby was being able to pick its own head up and move and, you know, all these different things. So for all my kids, for 3 months, the day we put them in that crib, I was there. And the bassinet, when we did put the baby in a bassinet, it was by our feet. And a lot of times I put my head there instead of my feet, you know, at the end of the bed. So for me, it was that journey of, I'm a dad. I need to be responsible. And even when we went to functions, like a party or an event, I was the one carrying the bag. I was the one feeding the baby when the baby. And so I would say to my ex, go enjoy the party. Go have fun. Go do. And people like, why are you changing the, all the men would go to me, why are you changing the diaper? Don't you have a wife? I'm like, yeah, this is my child. This is my child. You do what you want with your kids, because maybe your wife is changing the diapers. I said, but I'm changing the diapers. I'm feeding the baby. This is my child. So I took full responsibility. And I know a lot of parents, a lot of dads, they're like, oh, that's mom's job. And I disagree. Right? Because she carried it full term. Don't you think you need to do something as well? So that's how I saw it for me personally. So it transformed me for sure. You know?
Yeah, I can imagine. How beautiful that you had that such a strong connection with your children and that you were there for them. And Lord knows how you managed to get any sleep, because when they're really little, that's when they make all their little farmyard animal noises at night and you probably didn't get much sleep. So, right. Yeah, so thank you. Thank you for sharing that. That's really beautiful to hear.
Yeah, I was very fortunate. By the third week, my kids were sleeping through the night. Through the night. I mean, a good 6-7 hours. I was like, wow. And I'm hearing people like their kids were up every 30 minutes, every 45 minutes, every hour, and they were not getting sleep. I'm a light sleeper anyway. So even though my kid was sleeping 7 hours, 8 hours, I would still wake up and look, how are they doing? Are they breathing? So for me, it was a beautiful experience for sure. You know.
Yeah. And how beautiful that you we're able to do that, because that time is so precious, isn't it? It goes by in a heartbeat. It's before you know it, they're up walking and causing chaos. And that baby stage, that was one thing that really surprised me. That baby stage is so short, so short, and it goes by so quickly. Not when you're up every night and you've got sleepless nights and all the rest of it, but when you reflect back, it really just goes by. I wish I could have bottled up some of those moments and those, you know, like those baby cuddles when they're just so little. I wish you could bottle it up and then just open it up, you know, throughout the rest of your life and just go back into those moments.
But, right. You know, it brings me back memories when my son, we on a Sunday afternoon, I just put the TV on and he lay on my chest, right? And fall asleep, and we'd be there for hours. And I was in heaven. I really was.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that it's funny, because I really don't watch TV, but I do stream, and probably an hour a day, I just veg out a little bit and watch something. And my girlfriend and I were watching some medical show, and a woman didn't understand, because she was caring for somebody else's baby, why the baby was crying all the time. And she didn't know how to hold it. So she's like, and then I said, you need contact with the baby, right? So I'm over there saying, she's like, yeah, I know, you know. So you need that skin to skin contact. And I think that's what a baby, that's why breastfeeding is so important, is because it's that skin to skin contact. Because a lot of times, you know, I would hold my baby without a shirt on because it was that warmth that they're looking for, right?
I think that skin to skin contact is absolutely beautiful. And I think for those women who are not able to breastfeed, I think there is so much pressure. And I think however you feed your baby, is it doesn't matter per se, as long as you are nurturing your child and you're giving it the best that you can. For me, I struggled with breastfeeding with my first child because he was so little. You know, he was 7 months old when he was born, and he wasn't able to come out of hospital. And it wasn't until I overheard one of the other mums in the NICU ward speaking to one of the nurses and asking whether she could bottle feed her breast milk to her child, and then they were able to talk about it and say, yes, you know, and your baby will go home quicker because they will build up, you know, immunity quicker, and they will develop quicker, and you're actually better off taking your baby home sooner because you're going to get infections in hospital. And that was what I then did, and I expressed for the first 6 months for my son. And then I was able to breastfeed my daughters because they were born full term, but there was a huge amount of pressure. And I think there needs to be balance between the needs of the baby and the needs of the mother. Cause if the mother's not okay, then the child isn't okay. But that beautiful skin to skin contact that you can have with your child, regardless of how you feed them, is just divine. It's just divine.
It sure is. I mean, listen, I'm not a mom, but for me, it was amazing, right? I can only imagine if I was a mom. But when we consider the mindset transformation, would you mind telling us what, when the baby comes out? Yes, the first one, you could not really hold like you would because they had to be incubated, right? But even that feeling of that transformation, what was it for you personally?
I think I had this huge moment of just being like, oh, wow, I'm a mum. You know, like I suddenly was like, I don't know whether I'm competent. I don't know what I'm doing. I hadn't even had my antenatal class on how to give birth, let alone thinking beyond that. And so for me, it just suddenly hit me. I was like, they brought me a photo of my son Isaac in the incubator in intensive care, and they were like, this is your son. And I was like, whoa, I'm a mum. Oh, wow. I'm not sure I'm old enough. I'm not sure I'm wise enough. I'm not sure I know what I'm doing, you know, like, poor kid. But the minute I was able to hold him, when I was finally able to hold him, I think all of those feelings just went away, and it was just like this deep connection and this mindset of, I don't know all the answers and I never will, but I'm going to spend the rest of my life trying to figure that out to give you the best that I can. So yeah, it was a huge emotional, mental journey each sort of step of the way, and it was very different with each child, very different with each child.
So how long was it before you were able to hold your child, Isaac?
I think it was about 24, 36 hours. It wasn't too long, but you know, you're looking, we were very lucky that he was actually, considering he was 2 months prem, he was doing really well. That wasn't the case for a lot of babies in intensive care. And certainly I met a mother who'd had twins, and one of them was at home a year later. You know, they were one, and the other one was still in intensive care, still not knowing whether he was ever going to go home. That was very, very humbling to me. So even though it felt like a lifetime before I could hold my son, it really wasn't very long in comparison to the length of time that some people will wait. It was over a month before I could hold him without any wires and tubes and people around. Yeah, it was over a month before I could take him home. And that was so special, but so scary, because I was like, but I'm a mom and I've got used to doing all the things, you know, for him, feeding him, changing him, but I've got a team of people around me all the time in hospital to check. And all of a sudden you're taking away all the machines and things that beep and tell me when something's wrong. And now it's just you and me. Okay. Yeah, like, okay. And then it's like, oh, now you can take your son home. And I'm like, what? No, can we not stay? Can we not live here? Because I've got kind of used to this. So yeah, it was quite the journey, quite the mental journey.
It had to be. So tell us about the first day you were home with Isaac.
The first day I was home with Isaac, it was actually Valentine's Day.
Oh, wow.
And they unexpectedly said, you can take your baby home. And I was like, okay, yep, so when? And they said, right now. And I was like, what, right now? We'd done this sort of like live-in arrangement where you had a night with your baby by yourself feeding, and then they would weigh the baby before and then weigh the baby afterwards and make sure that they were putting on weight. And I was expecting to do a second night before they'd even talk to me about being able to go home. So I wasn't expecting it. And they were like, you can go home now. And I was like, but I'm not ready. I don't have this going at home outfit. I don't have the car seat in the car. So literally like raced home to go and get all his stuff and then came back to the hospital. And then they sort of, you know, we put him in the car, got him dressed, put him in the car seat, took him out to the car. And I was just like, whoa, I don't know whether I'm ready for this. Took him home, Valentine's Day, best Valentine's Day gift ever. Mm-hmm. And that night gave him his first proper bath in front of the open fire in the lounge.
Wow.
And that was just so incredibly special. It was such a beautiful gift for all of us. And introduced him to my crazy cat, who was like, what is this thing that makes a lot of noise? And and then just went from there.
So it's very funny when you say, wait a minute, I could take him home. No, let's stay here, right? Yeah. Because, and you said something about, like, if something was wrong, it beeped, right? No longer were you given that. There's no tubes or anything attached, no wires telling you about his heartbeat or anything else. Now it is, right? And in reality, if you think about it, no child is ever born with instructions either, right?
No, I wish they would be, but no, sadly not.
Yeah, if it came with the umbilical cord, here's your instructions for this one.
Exactly. This is what's going to happen throughout the trajectory of their life. This is what you need to know. This is all the cues that you can take. Yeah, that would be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would have been amazing. So, for example, my son is 22 years old now, and I can still recall the time that we brought him home, that I slept on the floor with him when he laid on my chest, and so many fond memories. And yet he's actually taller than me by 2 inches. He's a beautiful young man. And I still call him my little boy, right? He's my little baby, because to me, I don't care how old he gets or what he does with his life. He's still to me that little baby that I've always, you know, that I held so close. And it's very interesting because I'm a hugger. So when I see him, I give him a hug and a kiss. And he's like, oh, okay, Dad, okay.
I think that's so needed. It's so, so needed. And I'm really lucky that my son will always hug me and kiss me every time. Even when I drop him off at school, he's just doing his final exams at the moment. And we'll be, you know, in the car park, and he doesn't care who sees, and he'll just give me a hug, give me a kiss. And I feel really incredibly lucky that he does that without sort of like pushing me away. Because I know most kids go through that stage of being like, oh my goodness, you're my parent. You're so embarrassing. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm sure he says that behind my back.
Yeah. Oh, my kids know that they're like, okay, dad's here. I got to give him a hug and a kiss, you know. They do it anyway, you know. But it's not something that I force them. If they don't want to, they don't, right? But, you know, my son tells me yesterday, Dad, I'm trying to figure out my life. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, what I want to do, you know, my career path. And I said, you know what you want to do? He goes, yeah, I do. I said, so what do you want to do? He says, I want to be a fitness chef. I said, well, isn't that what you're doing? He goes, yes, I am. He goes, but I really want to get out there. I said, well, I'll help you. You know, so it's that he knows what he wants, but he's still asking for advice, which is kind of cool. He's still asking for, what do you think? How can, and so I'm there. I'm whatever you need. I'm there to help you out. And that's something that as parents, we sometimes have to, and many times I've allowed my kids to fail miserably because they need to learn that I can't hold their hand all the time. So, but not when they're very young, right? We kind of almost like I was, if you imagine, I was a helicopter parent, right? Because I slept on the floor. But you know, when they fell down, it wasn't like, oh my God, you know, I wasn't that kind of parent. I was more like, oh, it looks like you need a Band-Aid. You know, here's a Band-Aid, let's put one on. But I wasn't a helicopter parent where I didn't let them fail. I just, in their beginning stages, I knew I needed to be there totally, fully functional, almost like his team, right? But now I'm still part of his team, but I'm further away because like me, nobody wants to be told exactly what to do, right? I know you don't want to be told, you're doing that wrong, right? So we need to, as parents, we need to give leeway to our children. So even if they fail, but we need to be there to support them, don't we?
We do. We need to be there to pick them up. And those first 7 years, particularly that foundation that you created for your children is so incredibly important. And I think really sets up that inner knowing that you've got their back, that you're there for them, that you care enough. And it is hard as a parent to take that step back and know that your child may fail at something and have to watch them go through that. But in the journeys that I've been on with my children, I know that the resilience that they have, the things that they've been through, really, it's so important to let them fail. It's so important to allow them to figure stuff out for themselves. And the last 3 months for my children have been incredibly difficult, but yet I know that it's all the hard lessons that they've had in the past and the times that things have been tough for them that have enabled them to get through the last 3 months without me by their side. And that's been pretty challenging for me to not be able to help them through those times, but being so proud that they got through it with me by their side, but not right by their side. It's a balance. It's a continual learning experience for all of us, I think.
Yes, it is. You know, it's that knowledge that, you know, mom is there, you know, that comfort that mom is there. If I do need her, she'll help me out. I want to encourage everybody to pick up your book because it's an incredible book. And if you think about healing PCOs from the inside out, right? Infertility saved your life. When we think about it, people, pick up this book, pick it up. It's a great read. It's something that really transformed you as a person, but your understanding of it has allowed you to help other people. And I truly commend you, and I'm so happy to call you a friend, and to allow me to tell you my stories of even how, as a dad, you know, and I'll be honest, it's right now, if somebody said you're being blessed and you're going to be able to give birth, I'm ready. But I know it's not going to happen in my lifetime. Or
this
ever.
Next
or
lifetime. You put it out there for your next
it
lifetime.
It could be the next one, right? That means I'm going to be born a woman.
Exactly. What a beautiful gift.
It would you be. Know? I hope I don't look like this, though.
That's all right.
Sarah, thank you so much for coming on and sharing, you know, how a mom transforms from not being a mom to becoming a mom. And then it's a transformation that never goes away, because once a mom, always a mom. Even if your kids, you know, go off to college, get married, have their own kids, you become a grandma. Even if you're a grandma, you are mom first, right? And it saddens me when a mom has to bury their own kids. And I know one of my clients and friend who passed, his mom buried him and his sister, which was so devastating. And I pray for her all the time, that she finds the strength to carry on, because she has another son as well. And it's such a gift to have children. And anybody who has one, just remember to cherish them every moment, even when they're bad, even when they're terrible twos and they cry all night or whatever, or if they do the wrong things, just remember to that love that we have in our hearts to always show it to our kids, and always, always reach out to them. Even if they don't reach out to you as a parent, we should always reach out.
I think that's beautiful advice, and I agree with you. I think for me, I can't imagine the pain of burying a child, of losing a child. And I think that is something that is, there is a gift in death, in that it teaches us to truly live and to really, as you said, nurture, cherish, and honor our children, to be able to walk alongside them for as long as that journey allows.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. Sarah, thank you so much for being on the Seer Show. I truly, truly appreciate you. Do me a favor, everybody, share this episode with anyone who is either looking to become a parent, who is a parent, who even has a kid who's 2 years old and they're going through the terrible twos. At any age, at any time, parents are superheroes in my eyes. Thank you, everybody, for watching. Sarah, have yourself the most exceptional day. I know it's evening for you, so have a great evening. And everybody, make sure to follow, share, and like. And follow Sarah. Go to her website, sarahwillaby.com. Thank you, Sarah. Have a great, great day.
Thank you so much. I've loved our conversation.
Yes, likewise. All right, everybody, enjoy. Bye-bye.